and curious going forward. To our guest's great credit, when the word was out that he was going to be with us this evening, we were asked to sponsor this evening Yulei Nishmas Rachalei Bas Chaim Moshe Rakoi. It's Henry Linsky's mother, who was a survivor of Auschwitz and who's nursing us tonight. And one of the greatest of the great generation that, with all of the suffering that she endured, has a legacy of generations of individuals who have shown the good of interest. We come together this evening to meet Mechazek, to address our own feelings of loss over the loss of Nachman Daniel and others in the same parish of time, as well as the Yerida Ruchnias that we all had over the course of the months that we weren't in the shul, and the the Ruchnias that pushed upon us. And to be able to have the Rav Leibowitz join us this evening, the person that we've all learned from in various venues, within our own shul, before COVID, like 600 years ago, that wasn't so. Or whether it's in the over the course of the various internet availabilities that Rav Leibowitz has. Baruch Hashem, we're very excited, Yeshiva, that we count him amongst our ranks of Rosh Yeshiva, and one of the individuals that has a shaping hashpa over our mismachim will then go forward and carry with them their own learning and the learning of Rabbi Leibowitz and his style and insight. We all know from the various shiurim of Rabbi Leibowitz, whether it's the Lieutenant Halacha, and the 40 minute doubt, tonight we're getting the full hour. And his ability to distill some most difficult parashios of Klal Yisrael and to weave them in a way that we all can learn and benefit and absorb. And therefore, it's with great anticipation that I present really well.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Neuberger. I feel like I have to sort of justify my presence here this evening. I was here sitting over there last week when Rav Asher Weiss was here. So it is as difficult as it is to stand in Rabbi Neuberger's spot, it compounds the difficulty when I realize that I'm the follow-up act to Rav Asher Weiss. A little bit of the backstory. David Markowitz called me and said, would you like to come speak in Bergenfield? I said, anytime, that's like a home court for me. I love speaking in Bergenfield. He said, you know, chizuk for the community. I said, wait a second, Rav Asher Weiss is going to be in town next week. You should get Rav Asher Weiss instead. He said, what? Rav Asher Weiss is going to be in town next week? You're right, we should get Rav Asher Weiss instead. So Baruch Hashem, that was successful, and I take credit for that. So Rav Asher Weiss came last week and gave a tremendous amount of chizuk, and I told him, I said, whatever I'm going to give in chizuk, I'm just going to open up a minchas asher on emunah and bitachon, and I'm going to say, probably he'll say it better if he's going to say over the minchas asher, which he did. I said, okay, so I'll come some other time. And then David said, no, you should still come. I said, are you sure? I don't think it makes sense. So he then forwarded me an email that Rabbi Neuberger thought that we should still have this evening's learning. And I don't have that many rules in life, but one of my rules in life is that if Rav Neuberger Shlita says jump, I say how high. So if Rav Neuberger thought that it was worthwhile, so it's therefore worthwhile. And I thank you all for coming out tonight to learn together this evening, and hopefully we'll be able to be mechazek each other. The topic that I chose, or the title that I chose, which is, by the way, the hardest thing about speaking in places, picking a title and a topic, much, much easier to be told what to speak about. But the topic that I chose was what something along the lines, I don't remember the exact title, it's out there in the lobby, I think, but something along the lines of what was lost, or regaining the Kedusha that was lost. And I want to explain what I mean by that. I don't necessarily mean only, not to chas v'shalom ever minimize this, but only the terrible loss of life that that was suffered by Klal Yisrael, and certainly most profoundly in your community, in this very community. I mean three things, actually. I think that there were three losses that we need to recuperate from, we need to sort of lick our wounds, we need to figure out how to move on from, how to carry on. And I want to focus on each of them just a little bit. One is the loss, as Rav Neuberger Shlita referred to just a few moments ago, the terrible loss of Ruchnius, the loss of Torah, the loss of Tefillah that happened over the course of the last year and change. The second is the loss of very holy people, some extremely holy people. There's a lot of Kedusha that left this world over the last year and a half. And the third is the loss of a sense of community in a certain sense. So many of us who are so used to being part of a tzibur became yechidim and were sort of removed, and some are still somewhat removed from community. And I think it's important to talk about each of those and to try to frame it in a way where we can understand a little bit, or at least to gain a little bit of an idea of how to regain some of these things. You know, there was a phrase that was used a lot over the course of COVID, and that was that it's Ratzon Hashem. We all felt guilty about not davening with the minyan, so our rabbinic leadership properly told us and encouraged us that just as it's Ratzon Hashem normally to daven with a minyan three times a day, it's Ratzon Hashem now not to daven with a minyan. And our job is to fulfill Ratzon Hashem. And that is 100% correct. That is obviously accurate. Our job on this earth is to fulfill Ratzon Hashem. However, I think people sometimes misunderstand what that means. When we say that it was Ratzon Hashem that we behave in a certain way, it doesn't mean that nothing was lost. Even in following Ratzon Hashem, it could be that we lose something. I mean, for example, there is a klal in halacha, anus rachmana patre, that if a person is unable to perform a mitzvah, he's in ones, and he has no, violates an avera because of something out of his control, so he's pater, you don't have to pay the price for violating that avera. But it's also universally agreed, I think, that if, let's say, a person is an anus and is unable to learn Torah, something happened where they just simply do not have the capacity to learn Torah. They don't have the ability, they don't have the opportunity, they're not able to generate the opportunity, they're too busy just trying to survive, whatever it may be, whatever the reasons might be, a literal anus, it's, I think, universally agreed that the person at the end of the day is still not a Talmud Chacham. I mean, they may not be punished for the lack of Torah learning in their life, and their place in Olam Haba may be secure, but they're still not a Talmud Chacham. Something is lost when we don't do mitzvos. Something significant is lost when we lack access to Torah and Tefillah in the way that we're used to accessing Torah and Tefillah and mitzvos and Ma'asim Tovim. Yeah, Hashem wanted us to stay home, but we cannot be blind to what was lost in doing so. Hashem wanted us to be davening at home, davening in our yards, whatever we were doing, but something was certainly lost. You know, when the Tameim Lenefesh Adam, those people who were Tamei, and were unable to bring Korban Pesach, complained and they said, Lama Nigara, why should I lose out? Why should we lose just because we were Tamei? Why can't we bring the Korban Pesach? It's a difficult question to understand. You know, I happen to be Israel, I'm not a Kohen, and I can't really complain. Lama Nigara. Why can't I do Birchas Kohanim? It looks like fun. I think I could hold my, you know, I studied my Star Trek. I know how to, I could hold my hand the right way. I think I'll be able to figure it out. Lama Nigara. I like giving brachos. I do it all the time now. Every time I don't know the answer to a question that someone asks me, I give them a bracha, and they're happy, and they take it. It's fantastic to give brachos. Lama Nigara. Why shouldn't I be able to do it? So what kind of question, Lama Nigara? Rav Druk quotes from Rav Gedalia Shor, Zichron Levracha, I believe it's his yard site tonight, if I'm not mistaken, that when it comes to a kiyum mitzvah, even if there is good reason that we couldn't do it, and the halacha exempts us in certain circumstances, we still are missing the maila of that mitzvah. There's something, there's some quality that's gained from that mitzvah that we simply don't have. The Zohar quotes a maisa, Rav Druk mentions, the Zohar quotes a maisa of a holy child that refused to look in the face of Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda one day. He saw Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda, and he sort of turned away. And apparently, I don't know who this child was, I don't understand the whole inyan, but there's something about this that the child knew. He had an intuitive sense of who was worthy of looking at and who was not worthy of looking at. And here are these two very holy people, Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda, and the child doesn't look at them. And they say to Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda, "What did you do?" And they say, "You know what? It's taka true. We didn't say Kriya Shema today bizman. And the reason is we were osik b'mitzvah. Now halacha is osik b'mitzvah, pater min ha-mitzvah." But says Rav Druk, apparently, even though it was al pi halacha, it was correct. When you're osik b'mitzvah, you're pater from mitzvah. When you're engaged in one mitzvah, you don't have to do the other mitzvah. By the way, that's the only reason not to say Kriya Shema bizman, if a person is osik b'mitzvah. So they did the correct thing. But apparently there was still something missing, because of the lack of the missing out on the mitzvah caused them to miss out on some quality that a person gains from doing the mitzvah. Moreno Rav Shechter Shlita always quotes that the Gra, in the Hakdamah to the Pasah Shulchan, it says that when the Gra was a child, his father taught him all the chachmos. He taught him all the Shiva chachmos, except for medicine. And he didn't want the Gra to study medicine. And the reason he didn't want the Gra to study medicine is because if the Vilna Gaon would have studied medicine, he would have been such a great doctor that he would have had an absolute obligation to spend every moment of his day healing people, because he would have had the capacity to do so. Who knows what kind of medical breakthroughs could have come so much earlier had the Vilna Gaon utilized his vast talent in the field of medicine rather than in the field of Torah. But wait a second, so what's so bad? Let him study medicine. Granted, he won't be a Talmud Chacham if he's practicing medicine all day and all night and he doesn't have a moment to rest. Granted, he's not going to be a Talmud Chacham, but he'll be doing what he's supposed to be doing. He'll be doing Ratzon Hashem. And the answer is that it may be true that he'll be doing Ratzon Hashem, but the world can't live without the Vilna Gaon being the Vilna Gaon, without the Torah, the Vilna Gaon. What would the Jewish world look like today without the Torah of Rabbi Eliyahu Mivilna, of the Vilna Gaon? So it could be that somebody who is onus and is not mekayim a mitzvah is ki'ilu asa'a. What does it mean? It's ki'ilu asa'a. It's as if he did it, that Hashem is going to give him schar for doing that mitzvah. But is it really as if we did it? Probably not. You know, there's sometimes a chassan comes to shul on a Monday or a Thursday. And people feel good about that. But, you know, you got to miss tachan, no guilt. You got to miss tachan, Rav Druk points out, it's not really right. We should feel bad about that. We shouldn't feel good about that. There's a book called The Book of Awesome. A guy kept a blog about things that are just little things that happen in life that are just awesome. Not like super awesome things, little things. Like, you know, if you put on your winter jacket after not wearing it for several months, you know, the first cold day, and you reach into the pocket and there's like a $20 bill there, inflation, $100 bill there, right? So it's just like it feels awesome. You're driving down the street and it's a red light, but then it turns green right when you get there. Smooth, you don't even have to hit the brake. Little bits of awesome. So I once suggested in my shul, you know, what would the Jewish book of awesome look like? If we had to put together like uniquely Jewish experiences of the Jewish Book of Awesome. Someone in my shul actually really bought into this idea, and he contacted the author of the Book of Awesome, and he asked for permission to produce the Jewish Book of Awesome. That permission was denied. He was not given the right to produce the Jewish Book of Awesome. But what would it look like? So I started asking, like, give me examples. And it was so sad, you know? Every example that people gave was a missed opportunity for a mitzvah. Oh, you know what's awesome? It's Motzoi Shabbos, and it's supposed to be Kiddush Levana, but it's cloudy. It's cloudy. You get to go straight home. Or, you know, it's a Monday, Thursday, Tachnun, you're like skipping to the train all day because it's like, you missed out on Tachnun, you didn't have to say the long Tachnun. Every example that people gave me in the Jew, it would have been the saddest book ever. Something is lost when we miss out on opportunities for Kedusha. So we did Ratzon Hashem, but we lost a lot of Kedusha. We lost a lot of Tefillah, we lost a lot of Torah. So how do we address that? Where do we regain that? How do we make up for that? And the place to find Kedusha, it seems, is the very place where we had it in the past. You know, when we think about the sin of Mei Meriva, what exactly went wrong over there? It's a very, very theologically, philosophically troubling area of Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu just misunderstood his instructions. Really? Moshe Rabbeinu can misunderstand things? What else did he misunderstand? Like, is Lo Tirzach still Lo Tirzach? What else did Moshe Rabbeinu misunderstand? That we could just say he misunderstood what his instructions were? He misunderstood a nevuah? And the alternative is maybe even more troubling. Did he understand and disobey a direct command of the Ribbono Shel Olam? So obviously I'm not the first to ask this question. My wife, when she was in college, did a paper on like 12 answers to this question of what exactly happened at Mei Meriva. And even it's like Hashem set him up for failure. Hashem tells him, "Kach es hamate, take the stick, va'akel es ha'eda, atav aron achicha, v'dibartam el ha'sel le'inehem, and then you should speak to the cell of Anas and Meimav." So, and then the cell of the rock is going to give water. Now, back in Parshas Beshalach, Moshe was commanded, "V'hikisa b'tzor, you should hit the rock." And now Hashem says, "Take the stick, go to the rock, speak to it, and it's going to give water." And Moshe Rabbeinu, it's natural, he's going to think, oh, the stick, the rock, water. I know this drill. This happened before. You're supposed to take the stick and hit the rock. Why else am I taking the stick? Hashem seems to be setting it up for failure. Why tell him to take the stick if he's not supposed to use it? And if hitting a rock is really such a bad thing to do, why was it okay in Parshas Beshalach? Now all of a sudden it's not okay anymore. So there are many different approaches. The Avnei Nezer has a fascinating idea, though. It's one of dozens of approaches, but the Shem Yishmuel, the son and successor of the Avnei Nezer, as the Sakhat Rav Rebbe, quotes from his father. And he points out that there are items in Judaism that are called Tashmishei Kedusha. We all know that if you have a mezuzah that gets worn out, Sefer Torah, Tefillin, mezuzah, someone actually told me they live in Beit Shemesh, on the hottest block in Beit Shemesh, which is pretty hot, and they put a mezuzah in a metal case outside of their home, and they went to get their mezuzahs checked, and it's a little bit funny, but a little bit sad also. They opened up the mezuzah, and ashes just fell out of the case. Do not put a metal case if you live in Beit Shemesh. Not a good idea. But we know that typically that's not how a mezuzah gets ruined. The lettering becomes faint after a while. There's a crack in the letter, something like that. So we put it in Geniza, Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah. They become ruined. We're not permitted to throw them away. There's a din of Shemus. That's Tashmishei Kedusha. It's unlike Tashmishei Mitzvah. A used lulav could be thrown away. One of my dreams is to write a book about the 100 questions that people ask every single year. That no matter how many times it gets answered, but I always forgot. I always get that question from a lot of people every year. How do I get rid of my lulav? Oh, what did you do last year? but for whatever reason, people forget every single year what the answer is. Okay, so but we know that how do you get rid of lulav? You don't have to put it in Shemus. It's Tashmishei Mitzvah. It's allowed to be thrown away in a respectful manner. It's a minute to burn it with chametz. Okay, you'll forget again. You'll ask after Sukkot. But items of Kedusha apparently retain that Kedusha. Similarly, says the Avnei Nezer, Hashem specifically tells Moshe Rabbeinu, v'dibartem el, not a sela, but el ha-sela. Don't speak to a rock, speak to the rock. Meaning, if you can successfully locate, if you can find that original rock that had provided water, all you're going to need to do is speak to that rock. No significant action, no hitting, no big ordeal. Just speak to it. You know why? Because that rock has a history already. That rock has already provided water. It's no longer providing water, but that which has a history has the ability to provide water more easily than that which doesn't have a history. It doesn't take drastic action to bring back that ability. But if Moshe Rabbeinu is unable to find Hasela, he's unable to find that rock, and he's going to have to bring water out of a new rock, says the Avnei Nezer, that's when he needs his stick. In the event that he can't find the rock, well, then some drastic action is going to have to happen. He's going to have to pull out the playbook from Parshas Beshalach. And he's going to have to actually hit the rock. Because if it doesn't have a history, it's much more difficult to pull out the water from the rock. Moshe's mistake then was not in the understanding of the Nevuah, nor in disobeying the Ribbono Shel Olam. It was that he got so caught up in the tumult of the moment. People were already starting to criticize him. You know, the masses are very hard to please. And especially when they're all there and they're criticizing, they're looking at your every action and they're criticizing everything that you do. There were probably chants. Chanting is the worst. It's very hard to think rationally when there's chanting going on. And he had to figure out what to do in the moment, and he didn't recognize which was the rock. He thought he was hitting a rock. It turned out he was hitting the rock. All he needed to do, if he found the rock, was to speak to it, not to hit it. And that was his mistake, says the Avnei Nezer. An interesting approach. But what emerges from the Avnei Nezer is that when something is infused with Kedusha, even if that Kedusha is currently obstructed from our view, it's currently unavailable to us, it's much easier to find the special spark, to bring it out again in that very place where the Kedusha originated. It's much more difficult to rebuild a new Kedusha somewhere else. The reemergence of Kedusha is a much smoother process than bringing about the initial emergence of Kedusha. There's a Yerushalmi in the first parak of Kiddushin. The Yerushalmi writes that how long did it take to infuse Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha? You learn Sefer Yehoshua. There were 14 years of Kibush V'chiluk, 14 years for Eretz Yisrael to gain its Kedusha. And then when we come back, how long does it take when we came back in the days of Ezra, whoever did come back, the partial coming back in the days of Ezra, how long does it take to regain the Kedusha? Says the Yerushalmi, immediate, just like that, the Kedusha's back. Moreno Rav Shechter Shlita points out in Eretz HaTzvi, in Siman Lamed, in the name of Rav Chaim, that it's not limited to the times of Ezra. At any point in history, when Jews return to Eretz Yisrael, we bring Kedusha out of the land, and we don't have to wait 14 years for it to happen. You move to Eretz Yisrael, you may have to wait 14 years for all your appliances to work or something, but you don't have to wait 14 years for the Kedusha to happen. The Kedusha's there right away, because it already went through that process once. The Gemara Nida tells us about the Torah that the child learns inside the womb. So what's the point of learning the Torah in the womb if the angel is going to cause him to forget all of that Torah anyway? So Salvation explained this on the Baal HaTanya, really, that when the Torah has been infused into a person, even if you can't see its presence is no longer evident, it could be reestablished much more easily. Only an angel can administer that initial injection of Torah. But once it's there, parents can do it, teachers can do it, siblings can do it, people could even do it on their own. People could even strive in learning on their own. Because to cause Kedusha to reemerge is much easier than to bring Kedusha out originally. And therefore, if we lost out on the Kedusha of Tefillah B'Tzibur, if we lost out on the Kedusha of Torah, if we lost out on the context within which we do so many of our mitzvahs, our best chance to bring it back is in the place where it used to be, is in the place where we always had it, where we experienced Tefillah B'Tzibur, where we daven on Yom Noraim, where we daven three times a day, where we learn Torah all the time. That's how some of the Achronim understand the inyan of Makom Kavua for Tefillah. You know, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that someone who's Kaveh Makom L'Tefillah, so they say about him, Hey Anav, what a humble person. Now, I love humble people, but what does humility have to do with being koveh makom l'tfilaso, having a set spot for your tefillah? Some of the Achronim understand that when a person is koveh makom l'tfilah, he's saying that I am not worthy of my tefillah being answered. But there's something about this place, because this place is not just this tefillah. It was a tefillah yesterday and a tefillah the day before, and it has years of history of tefillah. And I'm building on those years of history of tefillah. And each tefillah is another, it's a midget standing on the shoulders of giants. A little person standing on the shoulders of giants. In order to enhance that level of Kedusha. But then there was another loss. Not only our Torah, not only our tefillah, but some very, very holy people. Old, young, in between. Very, very holy people. It's Ki'ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Melaket his Shoshanim. He went and he picked his finest roses. You know, this week's Parsha is Parsha's Chukas. There is a practice that's recorded in the Magen Avram that this Friday is a fast day. I mean, to ruin everybody's Friday, because we don't do it. But there is a fast day this Friday. And why was there a fast day this Friday? The Magen Avraham records that when the 24 wagon loads of Svarim were burnt, they did a She'ilas Chalom, which is also an interesting thing to do that we don't really know how to do. And they were told the response that they got in the She'ilas Chalom was Dog Zeiras Oraisa, which is the translation of Zos Chukas HaTorah. So instead of setting the date for the fast on the anniversary of the burning, because the answer related to the Parsha, they were Koveya the fast on Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas, because apparently it connects to Parshas Chukas. What in the world does the burning of wagon loads of Svarim of the Talmud have to do with Zos Chukas HaTorah? So, Zos Chukas HaTorah is Parshas Parah. Why is it that we read this Parsha nowadays, before Pesach? So we read it before Pesach to remind ourselves, to purify ourselves from Tumas Meis. But we don't have to do that anymore, unfortunately, or not yet. We don't even have a Parah Aduma. Furthermore, Chazal tells us that the Chacham Mikol Adam, Shlomo HaMelech, says about Parah Aduma, Amarti Achim Aviyir Rechalka Mimeni. I thought I could understand it, but it's beyond me. Clearly, Hashem didn't want anybody to understand Parah Aduma. Hashem is making a point that whatever you understand is only by the grace of God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the ability to understand so much that we may be brilliant, we may be sharp, but however brilliant or sharp your mind might be, you're only going to understand what Hashem wants you to understand. And that's a very important point in humility. But it begs the question, of all places in the Torah, for Hashem to make this point, that here's going to be the place I don't want you to understand. Here's going to be the place that even if you're Shlomo HaMelech, all the Solomonic wisdom in the world is not going to help you to understand this. Why the process of purifying from Tumas Meis? It could have been any halacha that Hashem made some sort of unusual process. Why Dafka, the process of purifying from Tumas Meis? That became the quintessential chok. Furthermore, the Torah tells us, Ushmartim v'asisem, ki hichach maschem v'vinaschem le'inei ha'amim asher yishmu l'nez kol ha'chukim e'ele v'amru rak am chacham v'navon ha'goy ha'gadol hazeh. When we follow the mitzvahs, when we do kol ha'chukim e'ele, the nations of the world are going to say, wow, what a brilliant people. What a sophisticated people. They're going to admire us for our depth, for our sophistication. And yet when it comes to Parah Aduma, Rashi writes, Levisha Satan v'umos ha'olam moninas Yisrael. They're going to mock us. Ma ha-mitzvah zos? Ma tam yeshba? What are you doing? This doesn't make any sense. Lefichach kasav b'chuka. And therefore the Torah reminds us it's a chok. Gzeri yimi l'fanei ve'en l'chol rishos l'harer echareha. It's a gzeira. We can't question. But how do we reconcile that? The Umma Solomon is supposed to look at when we observe the Chukim and say that, oh, wow, that's brilliant. It's a great thing that you're doing. And yet, they're mocking us about Parah Aduma. So in general, we know the klal that the Rambam tells us, that if you feel that you're straying in one direction, you're supposed to pull yourself in the other direction. Right? If you're driving in the car and you find that, the indicator, I just got a new lease, so now your cars tell you when you're messing up. So you're driving the car, so the indicator starts going off that you're crossing the lane. So first of all, stop texting. But then, you pull the wheel in the other direction. You don't hold it straight. Because you have to pull in the other direction in order to get straight, in order to get in the right place. You have to overcompensate a little bit. If a person is too stingy, he should train himself to be overly generous. Essentially, practice what you want to be, and then you will become what you strive to be. Achrei apulos, nimshachos alvavos, that you're gonna work and try and do and practice, even if you're not feeling it, and eventually you'll become a changed person. Rav Yosef Salant, the Ber Yosef, it's a fabulous sefer on Chumash. If you never learned Ber Yosef before, I actually have a Talmud that reached out to me recently. I used to learn Ber Yosef with him, Chavrusa, DRS boy, when he was in 12th grade, and he said that turned him on to learning Ber Yosef. I said, but you were in my shir the whole 11th grade. He said, no, nothing, zero. But Ber Yosef, that completely turned him on to learning. It was, so Ber Yosef, Rav Yosef Salant, used to give drashas in Yerushalayim, and no less a person than Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach used to attend his drashas. And legend has it that Rav Shlomo Zalman said, you know, these are good drushes, you should write these down. And we owe Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach for the Sefer Be'er Yosef. That's the story they tell. I don't know how to verify it. He has no Wikipedia page, no Google page. He has very little virtual footprint, the Be'er Yosef. You can't find out much about him. But he suggests that Hashem gave us a law that will train us to accept that we can't understand everything. There are things in life that we will never understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to accustom us to being comfortable with that. To being comfortable with the fact that we're not going to understand a lot of things. So he gave us a Torah with a command to try to understand as much as we can, and then he told us, and you know what? No matter how hard you try, there are certain things you're just not going to understand. And you know where he gave us that law? You know what context he put that law in? He put that context in the law of our encounter with death, of our encounter with a mace. We're confused, we're disoriented. It's the only time the Torah says, you know what, you don't have to do any mitzvos. You're too disoriented to be able to function normally when a person is in the immediate aftermath of encountering death. And by following that law, the one that even Shlomo HaMelech cannot comprehend, we grow accustomed to following the details of every halacha, whether we understand them or not. But even more than that, we grow accustomed to being able to say, I just don't know. I just don't understand. If we were to feel that we have to understand everything, then we would start to try to answer the unanswerable. Rav Yosef Salant explains, the Gemara Menachos, the Gemara tells us, B'shah sha'ala Moshe l'marom, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, Ra'a HaKadosh Baruch Hu shekosher ksharim li'osios. He saw that the Ribbono Shel'olam was tying crowns on the letters. And Moshe asked, Mi ma'akev al yadcha? What's holding you up? You know, the Torah's ready. It looks like it's finished. Let me bring it home already. And Hashem said, no, Adam Echad Yesh, who's going to live, Besof Kamadoros, there's going to be a guy who's going to live in many generations from now. Akiva ben Yosef Shemei, his name is Akiva ben Yosef, and he's going to darshan these ksarim, he's going to darshan tilei tilim shel halachos, he's going to know what you don't know, Moshe Rabbeinu, he's going to know how to interpret these crowns. And the Gemara continues, Amar the fun of Ribbono Shel Olam. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't feel dejected right away. He didn't say, well, wait a second, what do you mean, I don't know, I'm the one getting the Torah. He didn't, no, Moshe Rabbeinu, like most Talmidei Chachamim, absolutely adored Talmidei Chachamim. So his first response, there's going to be such a great Talmidei Chachamim, let me see him. It's a great thing about great Talmidei Chachamim. People who have achieved a lot in Torah, they love Talmidei Chachamim. I just read a story recently that Rav Ruderman, Zichron Levrach, the Rosh Yeshiva Ner Yisrael, had visited Eretz Yisrael, and he saw that a young Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the Stipler's son, as he was known then, had a frock that was all worn. It was not bekavadik. And Rav Ruderman said, let me buy you a new one. And Rav Chaim said, no. And he begged him and he begged him and he begged him until Rav Chaim agreed that Rav Ruderman could buy him a frock. And Rav Ruderman came back from America and he said, I bought a mantle for a Sefer Torah. And they said, well, why would you buy a mantle for a Sefer Torah? He said, no, I bought Rav Chaim a new frock, a mantle for a walking Sefer Torah. Gedol Le'olam, appreciate Talmidei Chachamim. Moshe Rabbeinu was told there's going to be a guy who can darshan the Ksarim Shel Osios. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, let me see him. I'd like to meet the guy. So Amar Lo Chazor La'acharecha. Turn around. Halach V'yashav B'sof Shmona Shuros. So Moshe Rabbeinu sat in the eighth row of Rabbi Kiva's classroom. V'lo Hayi Yodea Mahein Omrim. And he was lost, which is a chizik for any of us if we're ever lost in a shir. Moshe Rabbeinu was lost in Rabbi Kiva's classroom. The way they used to seat them in the class, you get the impression from the Gemara, is they sat them in order of where they belonged. There was a hierarchy. Eighth row meant he was in the back of the classroom because that's where he belonged. I had a second grade Rebbe that used to do this. At the beginning of every day, he would give out numbers. And if you got number one, it meant you were the best guy. And if you got number 27, it meant you were the 27th best. And every day. And like it was like a big thing. People would say, oh, that guy's number 32. It was a yeshiva in Brooklyn, so there were like 45 kids in the class. You know, so it was like, that's apparently people used to be tougher. They used to be able to handle this. Moshe Rabbeinu was tashash kocho. He didn't understand what was going on, and he felt very weak. Kivin sheyegia l'davrecha, but then they got to a certain topic. Amar lo talmidav, Rebbe minayin lach, the talmidav asked Rabbi Akiva, how do you know what you're saying? This is true. Amar lehen, halach l'moshe misinai. even Rabbi Kiva had to say, you know what, I don't know why, it's just halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai, and Moshe Rabbeinu felt better. Chazar uba lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, amar lefan of Ribono Shel Olam, yesh lecha adam kazeh v'ata nosin Torah al yadai? Moshe Rabbeinu goes back to the Ribono Shel Olam, there's going to be a guy like this, and you're going to give me the Torah? Amar lo shtok kach ala b'machshava lefanai. So he says, that's what I thought, that's what I was thinking to do. Amr lefan of Ribono Shel Olam, hariseni tarasa, hareni scharo. I'd love to see the reward for such Torah. Amr lo chazor l'acharecha, take a look again. And he looks through the screen. Chazor l'acharev ra sheshoklin besaro b'makulin. And he saw the gruesome, terrible way that Rabbi Akiva was killed. Amr lefan of Ribono Shel Olam, zu Torah v'zu schara. That's the reward. Amr leshtok kach ala b'machshava lefanai. What is the story over here? What's the kach ala b'machshava lefanai? What does halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai have to do with the end of the story and Rabbi Akiva's demise? How did the experience with Rabbi Akiva help Moshe? Says the Be'er Yosef. Moshe Rabbeinu was bothered how it could be that he didn't understand parts of Torah. And he was shown that no matter how great you are, even if you're as great as Rabbi Akiva, there are parts of Torah that you will not understand. It's halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai. Even Rabbi Akiva has to stop short of saying, I can explain everything. And when Moshe sees Rabbi Akiva's gruesome death, he's bothered once again. And this time Hashem says, kach ala b'machshava lefanai. Think about our previous conversation. Why do you think I just had that conversation with you? I had a conversation with you about the nature of Torah because I was trying to prepare you for the nature of life. You don't understand the Chukos HaTorah, you're not going to understand the Chukos HaChayim. Kach ala b'machshava lefanai. I thought about this, and that's why I paved the way with the Chukos HaChayim, with the Chukos HaTorah, rather, in order to allow you to deal with the Chukos HaChayim. In the Chorashus Lahara Rachareha. So we don't have Rishus Lahara Racharecha. But we lost a lot. We lost a lot of Kedusha. We can't start explaining and we can't start. We know that. These are the ABCs that we were raised with. But what? What do we do? So I saw someone quoted from Yevyonis and Eibshitz. I haven't tracked it down. I'm afraid to try too hard in case it's not true. But I believe it's true. That Yevyonis and Eibshitz apparently says, somewhere in Yaros Devash, that the midos of people that have passed away become hefker for the rest of us to claim. That when the person leaves this world, those things that they did, those mitzvos, those midos, those areas that they excelled, are opportunities for the rest of us to latch onto them. They're floating, we just have to grab them. And we can keep that kedusha, or some remnant of that kedusha, in the world by latching onto them. It's rarely more obvious what exactly that kedusha is, what exactly those mitzvos are, what those mitzvos are. People typically don't leave a blueprint of what they do each and every day in terms of mitzvos and ma'asim tovim, but some people do. I remember sitting next to Rav Neuberger in the Morris home, and we were holding that Kodesh Kadashim piece of paper. And Rav Neuberger said, this is the blueprint. And we follow our Chachamim. That's the blueprint. Rav Yonah Snipeshitz tells us it's there for the taking. These midos, these mitzvos, the idea of chazering dafyomi, whoever would have thought of that? Calling babi, people should have thought of, but a lot of people don't. And it's there for the taking. And people understood that intuitively. So the loss of Kedusha in this world, the loss of Anashim Kedoshim, Nashim Tzidkanios. The response is, find those midos. They're floating everywhere. Grab them. Make them ours. But then there was a third loss. And that was the loss of community. Rav Asher Weiss highlighted this point last week. You know, the theme of this past week's parsha, Parsha's Korach, is machlokas. And we find a lot of lessons about machlokas, and more importantly, how to avoid machlokas in Parshas Korach. And there's a word, a funny word, that comes up in almost every machlokas in all of Tanakh. Right before Sheni, of this past week's Parsha, Aron Mahu Ki Salinu Alav. After Korach is swallowed by the earth, Vayilonu kaladas Yisrael mimacharas against Moshe and Aaron. Even in Parshas Shelach, the word is used repeatedly. Ad masay le'eda arah zos asher hema malinim alai. What's this thing about lina? Again, in Parshas Shelach, after they're told they're going to be punished, asher halinosem alai. V'hanashim asher sholach Moshe l'sur esaretz vayilonu alav. Back in Bishalach, the first time we complained at Mara, vayilonu amal Moshe le'mar manishteh. In the incident where we asked for meat, v'nachnu ma kisalinu aleinu. And I could go on. I can't really, but, you know, you get the point. Vayalinu lina lan. Well, what is this about? And not only that, after the incident of Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu has the leaders of each shevet place a stick down, and Aaron HaKohen puts a stick down, and everybody else's stick remains the same the next day, and Aaron's stick goes, grows prachim and tzitzim and shkedim, and that symbolized that Aaron indeed was chosen. So Moshe Rabbeinu takes the stick and he shows it to everybody. Aaron was chosen, and the pasuk then tells us, "Vayikhu ish matehu." Everyone took their stick back home. Why would you take your stick back? Meaning there was this contest. Everyone entered it. It's like the losing lottery ticket. It's on the floor outside of 7-Eleven. Right? The scratch-off, they didn't know people like shoot for the garbage, miss, and it's on the floor. No one brings it back home. No one takes their failing grade and pastes, you know, and puts it up on the refrigerator. It's the good grades that you put up on the refrigerator. Kid comes home, he says, I got 112. That one we don't put up, because I'm always like, 112 out of how many? You know, like, I'm a little suspicious of 112s. But a 98, that sounds like a good grade. That's going up on the refrigerator. Why would he take a failing thing and take it home? What are they doing? I heard from Rav Yisrael Reisman Shlita that the shorish of lina is to stay overnight. A carbon can become possible lina. And this alludes to a very important element of avoiding machlokas. You see, it's really impossible to expect people to avoid machlokas entirely. People will always have differences of opinion. There will always be some people that are offended. There will always be some people that are insulted. It's human nature. We like kavod as much as we try to fight it. We like kavod. And when we feel that we aren't being treated with the proper kavod, we don't always react nicely. I'm reminded of the story of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. They say that at his wife's levaya, they had been married for over 60 years, he got up and he said that the practice is that one is supposed to ask mechila from the nifter at a levaya, but after more than 60 years of marriage, he has nothing for which to ask mechila. That is not human. That's beyond comprehension. I don't think I've gone 60 minutes without having to ask mechila. 60 years? I tell that to Hasanim sometimes. They'll say, I'm going to be just like that. It's like you hear Rav Eliashiv learned Torah for 20 hours a day for 100 years straight. I'm going to be just like that. No, you won't. It's good that we have Gedolim to look up to. But people are people. People are going to be upset. People are always going to have differences. If I could admit to listening to podcasts every once in a while, the Boca Raton rabbis interviewed a couple, their least famous guests probably. Not a prime minister or anything. A couple, Mr. and Mrs. Blufeld, who had been married for 80 years. They were celebrating their 80th wedding anniversary. Both of them were over 100 and they were with their seichel. And when they were asked for their secret of success in marriage, Mr. Blufeld confessed that they disagree and they argue like any other couple. But he said, we never go to bed angry. 80 years of marriage, and every single night, they made sure that whatever machlokas may have existed during the day is put to bed at night and does not get out of bed the next morning. A person who gets offended, who has tainus, is not a bal machlokas. What distinguishes a bal machlokas from others is that the bal machlokas holds on to the machlokas. He lets it stay with him overnight. Vayilonu. Doesn't know when to let go. His feelings of hurt and offense remain sharp even the next day. Now, I'm personally not an easy person to live with. I'm like a child, right? If my wife doesn't give me very specific instructions of exactly what to do, I can't get it right. So my wife shared with me recently how she copes with it, her mental exercise. Like when I didn't do what I was supposed to do, or I did it, but I did it all wrong. So she says she goes through a mental exercise. Is this worth my shalom bites? Or can I just fix it in like 2 minutes? And then she fixes it, and that's it. It's a pretty amazing thing. She doesn't even wait till the next day. Just goes through that mental, in the heat of the moment, goes through that mental exercise. That's the difference. How do you not get annoyed? I told her, she came into my office, she said, I need you to do these three things. I was answering my emails, totally forgot. So she did them. Because why should I fight about it? Okay, that's a special tzedekah. Obviously, that's a different madrega. But the difference is someone who holds on to the machlokas. And the fact that the word vayilonu refers to machlokas and bali machlokas is a beautiful example of the depth and the profundity of the Hebrew language. Once the machlokas remains, after it should have been let go and forgotten about, we have an example of the worst kind of machlokas, the most negative midos. And that maybe that, said Rabbi Reisman, is what the sticks were all about. Briskarov said the idea of the sticks, that everyone brought their stick and stuck it into the ground, was to make a show that everyone's ki'ilu applying for the job of Kohen Gadol. That everyone wants the job. They want Aaron's job. Now, of course, Baruch Hu makes a show of it, that Aaron's stick is the one that produces flowers, that he's the one, the almonds, he's the one. Everyone else was rejected. They'd hoped for the job, they were turned down, they took it home. Rabbi Reisman suggested the idea of them taking it home was to demonstrate that it's okay to want to be the Kohen Gadol. It's okay to fight for the job. It's okay to question why Aaron was chosen. But when you lose, you pick up your stick and you take it home. You don't leave it there. It's been a rough 15 months for the Jewish people as far as communities go, as far as machlokas goes, as far as division goes. Of people feeling offended. Why didn't this person call me? Why didn't that person reach out? And one of the challenges that we face is letting go. Rav Asher Weiss spoke here last week about the young man who asked if he's allowed to daven in the shul that wasn't careful about COVID guidelines. Does the negligence of the administration and membership of a Mossad mean that they should be shunned forever? And he says he thinks the avoda right now is to do the opposite. There's no longer a threat to life in maintaining this machlokas. We take our sticks back, and we let it never be said about us, that vayilonu. I have a good friend, Rabbi Yechiel Weberman, who reminded me recently of a vart that I told him 15 years ago. I don't remember it, but I'll take it. The Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Yud tells us that Rabbi Bar Bechana was shown the place where Korach Va'adasa were swallowed by the ground, and he was able to hear them screaming, Moshe Emes Visaraso Emes. Can you imagine that? Every 30 days, it comes to the earth, comes around to that spot, and you can hear them still screaming, Moshe Emes, Visaraso Emes. And apparently, I said quite brilliantly, I must have heard it from somewhere, what would have been if they would have said those exact same words 5 minutes earlier? They would have spared themselves an eternity of being the villains of Klal Yisrael. They would have spared themselves the indignity of being in that crack in the ground, screaming, Moshe Emes, Vehin Badoin, and admitting how terrible they are 5 minutes earlier. They just had to let it go on time. And it all would have been fine. Our avoda is to move on, to let it go. On a personal level, on a communal level. And our avoda is to come together. So yeah, there are a lot of questions that we can't answer. Rav Meir Tversky Shlita told the story of a young yeshiva bacher who went to Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung's Zichrono Livracha to ask a question. Rav Hirschsprung was one of those people that could do the pin test. You stick the pin in the Gemara, he could tell you what word it went through on every page. It's hard to even imagine that. He had all of Shas at his fingertips. And the boy asked the question. Rav Hirschsprung said, good question. I don't know. I always tell my children, there's no indignity in saying I don't know. There's no embarrassment in saying I don't know. I said, who is the smartest person, the greatest Talmud Chacham you've ever met? And they grew up in my house. They know what to say. They said, Rav Schechter. And I said, and who says I don't know more often than most people? Rav Schechter always says I don't know. It doesn't always mean I don't know, but he often says I don't know. There's nothing embarrassing about it. Rav Hirschsprung said, I don't know. The boy's smile, that smug look on his face. When the reverse one said, I don't know, he doesn't know, and I don't know. So me and reverse Sprung are the same as far as this piece of Torah. We both don't know. Reverse Sprung noticed the look on his face, and he turns to the fellow sitting next to him, and he says, it's cute. He thinks his I don't know is the same as my I don't know. Meaning, you could ask somebody, Pshat in the Tosfos, and he could say, I don't know. And he could mean, I don't know, because I don't know what Tosfos is. I don't know where to find it on the page. I don't know who wrote it. I don't know how to read Hebrew. And someone else could say, I don't know, because it's taka a problem that Tosfos is so sort of Tosfos in Erevin or something. Especially if understood like Rabbi Kivegar. It's also an I don't know. But it's a very, very different kind of I don't know. Our avoda, with all of the I don't knows, with all of the things that we're left grappling with, that we're left struggling with, is not to know. There are things that are chukim that we cannot know. The avoda is to turn it into a Rav Hirschsprung I don't know. To not be that kid's I don't know. To take a chok that we have and try to gain something from it. Try to see what's there. Rabbi Rudinsky, Rabbi Tzal Rudinsky from Muncie, pointed out that the sin of the Egel didn't happen out of the blue. The idea that there will be an Erev Rav who try to do terrible things is not limited to that generation. What made the Dor Deah particularly susceptible to the Erev Rav, he explains, was a basic breakdown in the Achdus of Klal Yisrael. You know, it wasn't that we said Eile Elohai Yisrael. It's Eile Elohecha Yisrael. That it didn't bother us that other people were struggling, that other people were worshipping the Avodah Zarah. So the kapara is para aduma. Becoming tamei in order to make another person tahar. Because I not only do I concern myself with what the other person is facing, but I even give up a little bit of my own tahara in order to help them out. Now, do I understand exactly what para aduma is all about? None of us do, even Shlomo HaMelech doesn't do. What Rudinsky is trying to do is he's trying to take the I don't know and turning it into a Rav Hirschsprung I don't know. Maybe there's some meaning there. Maybe the message of the chukah, the message of the chukas haTorah, and also the message of the chukas haChayim, is to be able to look out for other people. Is to be able to come together with other people. Rav Tversky told the story of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's incredible chesed. When Rav Chaim got married, his wife's grandfather, the Netziv, bought them a cow for a wedding present. It's not so in vogue anymore to do that. And that way, he figured he'll always have milk. At least they'll always have milk. But Rav Chaim would never keep anything for himself because he was Rav Chaim. He was Rav Chesed. It says it right there in his Matzeva. He gave everything away. They say that Rav Chaim's house only had a door. It was always open. So why did he need a door for? He only had a door because Rambam Shita is that you only put a mezuzah when the doorway has a door. So in order to be Yotzei Mezuzah, Lefi Shita's Rambam, he needed a door. Otherwise, there was no use for a door in Rav Chaim's house. So Chaim's wife complained to her grandfather that her husband gave away the cow. So the Netziv, in a move that perhaps was the only time in his entire life that Reb Chaim was ever outsmarted, bought a new cow and told Reb Chaim, this cow is not for you, it is mine. You are a shomer. You have every right to take the milk and keep the milk, but the cow is mine. And maybe that's the answer. The answer is not to the question of how do we explain, how do we understand. We don't. There are chukos hachayim and there are chukos haTorah. But how do we react to the loss of a sense of community? How do we react to the loss of Kedusha? We regenerate that Kedusha by going back to that place where the Kedusha originated, where we have so much of a history of Kedusha. We find all of those bits of Kedusha that are floating in the air with the unfathomable losses of very holy people who left so much behind for us to emulate and for us to latch on to. And we latch on to each other. We latch on to a sense of community. And maybe through that, we can take the chukos hachayim that the Ribbono Shel'olam has dealt us and turn them into a Rav Hirschsprung I don't know, where the Ribbono Shel'olam sees that we're making that effort to make the most of it. We're making that effort to reach out to him. We're making that effort to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And we'll get to that point, Be'ezras Hashem, where there won't be any more questions, and we'll be able to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam's master plan.